This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa News Tonight. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
One person particularly told me that he was worried that there could be some cases of people hitting the streets when the results were declared and it was in their favor.
Journalist Sananu Tour tells us Sierra Leone's capital remains tense as the main opposition questions partial results of Saturday's presidential election. Also, Sudan's paramilitary rapid support force declares a unilateral ceasefire for Eid el-Adha. And in Zimbabwe, young artists work to fight drug abuse. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. In Sierra Leone, the main opposition party has rejected the partial results of a tense presidential election showing President Julius Maada Bio leading in the polls. The All People's Congress Party alleges there were irregularities in the vote tally and says it will not accept what it calls cooked-up results. Monday evening, European Union observers said the electoral authorities' lack of transparency and communication had led to mistrust in the electoral process. For a picture of what's happening on the streets of the capital, I reached Sananu Tour, a journalist who drove around Freetown this morning.
Most of the shops were closed. There are just a few shops that are open and a few people on the streets. There's very, very easy traffic. Like, everything is actually moving. It's, like, easy. I spoke to some locals who raised concerns about the fact that the results had not yet been declared, and so they were waiting to see what the outcome of the results would be. One person particularly told me that he was worried that there could be some cases of people hitting the streets when the results were declared and it was in their favor. So he was hoping that the security forces will probably issue a curfew or a ban on movement when the election results are declared. So far from Freetown, the capital, the central side, and then the western side, everything has been very, very smooth. Everything has been easy, and a lot of people are just staying indoors. And another thing I noticed, that was Friday, before the election, I noticed a lot of people were in the shops buying food for quite a number of days. So I'm very positive people are home just chilling and just being relaxed. Yeah.
So you're saying before the election, even on Saturday, they were kind of stocking up on food items?
Yeah, that was Friday. I was in a few shops trying to get a few things, and I saw a number of people getting some food. That was from Freetown, the western side where I was. So I'm sure people are probably prepped up to stay home for a while until they get a final confirmation of the results.
This is just voluntary, right? With the shopkeepers closing their doors and people staying in, there's no curfew out there.
Nope, there's no curfew. Last election, I also there was a ban on movement during election day, but there's a law that has declared it illegal. So this year there was no ban, but I think people just took caution to just stay away because they realize if we stay away, we'll be safe. And those are just people trying to be careful and cautious themselves.
The All People's Congress Party has rejected the partial results of Saturday's election, showing President Julius Maada Bio in the lead. What do the provisional results show so far?
So the provisional results, from what I've seen from the Electoral Commission, was that they have about 1,900,000 votes tally around that area, which they said represents 60% of the votes. And the incumbent president, the government, had about 55% of that. That's about 1 million. And then the APC had about 41%, around 700,000 votes. And they have raised concerns. They actually raised concerns on the tallying process as far back as Sunday when they issued a press conference and they issued a press statement. The arguments were that the tallying process has not been transparent. They were asking the Electoral Commission to project the numbers on larger screens so they can all corroborate their figures and confirm them, but the Electoral Commission wasn't doing that.
Is it true that the APC was locked out of some of those or all of the vote-gathering places?
I can't independently confirm that, but I saw that in their press statement. However, what I can say is that I saw a statement, an interim statement by the Commonwealth Observation Group, and then they raised concerns about the tallying processes too. They said there were some concerns, and then they were going to issue that in their final report. But they had observed some issues of. They had observed some concerns with the tallying process and some transparency in there.
That is journalist Sananu Tord. I reached him earlier today in Freetown, Sierra Leone. You'll find updates on the Sierra Leone election on voaafrica.com. The leader of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF, has announced a two-day ceasefire for the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Adha. Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo also promised to prosecute members of his own RSF who commit violations against civilians in his now 11-week-long fight with the Sudan Armed Forces. Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
In a recording released Monday, General Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo declared his forces would observe a ceasefire for Tuesday and Wednesday, the eve of Eid al-Adha and the first day in the three-day Muslim festival.
I greet you during these blessed days of the month of Zulhijjah and ask Almighty God to restore security and stability in our beloved country. We declare a natural ceasefire for Tuesday and the first day of Eid al-Adha, except in cases of self-defense. I wish these days offer a chance at forgiveness and reconciliation among all components of our nation.
So far, the military has not commented on the unilateral ceasefire. Dagalo acknowledged the suffering of the Sudanese people as a result of his rapid support forces' battle with Sudan's army and said he hopes Sudan will emerge from its current crisis stronger and more united. He also addressed widespread reports of human rights violations his troops are accused of committing against civilians in Khartoum, Darfur, and other parts of the country.
We are closely monitoring all the violations being committed against innocent civilians by all parties, but specifically by our forces, including reports and allegations about looting. These violations go against the laws governing the Rapid Support Forces and the directive of its leadership. The RSF will take serious and decisive measures to address such violations.
The United States, the United Nations, and other governments have expressed concerns about reports that the RSF and allied militia have engaged in sexual violence, looting, and targeting of civilians in Darfur and Khartoum. Dagalo says those in his forces who have committed rights abuses will be prosecuted.
We firmly assert our rejection and condemnation of all violations committed against civilians, including those allegedly perpetrated by members of the RSF. We have therefore set up a special committee led by Major General Hussam al-Din Salih Fidel, the head of the field court. This committee enjoys full authority and has already begun its work in Omdurman, conducting on-site trials for individuals accused of committing violations against civilians.
Sudan's conflict between the army and the rapid support forces is in its 11th week. The United Nations estimates that 2.5 million people have been displaced from their homes and thousands have died since mid-April. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
The United Nations Refugee Agency reports that escalating violence in Sudan and lack of money are hampering the delivery of aid to nearly 2 million people displaced inside Sudan and more than 2.5 million refugees in neighboring countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The situation is likely to become more difficult for Sudan's people the longer the fighting goes on. The United Nations Refugee Agency reports it already has begun revising its initial projection that 1 million people will flee Sudan to neighboring countries by October. For example, the UNHCR says Chad now estimates 245,000 refugees will cross the border by October, up from an earlier estimate of 100,000. UNHCR Assistant High Commissioner for Operations, Ralph Mazou, recently returned from Sudan and the region. He says conditions for people on the move are becoming more dangerous. He is most worried by the situation in West Darfur. Aid agencies' access into Darfur, he says, is limited because of the violence. He notes increasing numbers of injured civilians are among the newly arrived refugees in Chad. He says colleagues in Chad are trying to move refugees away from the dangerous border to safer sites further in the country. He says this must be done before heavy seasonal rains make the area inaccessible to humanitarian assistance.
There have been threats along the border. You do have refugees who'd rather want to stay close to the border in order for them to be able to go back to their place of origin when the situation allows more easily, and others want to move away. I would say that over time, there's been less and less people wanting to stay at the border as the situation deteriorates in Darfur.
Another pressure point is South Sudan. Since the conflict began, more than 120,000 South Sudanese refugees have returned from Sudan. Mazou says that number is likely to increase to more than 2 million. He says having that many people returning to a brittle country like South Sudan poses certain risks.
If the support that is required to make sure that people can be reintegrated by and their communities not provided, then there is indeed a risk of this situation destabilizing country. If worst case scenario, we had 2 million people coming, that indeed would be very difficult to bear by a country that remains very, very fragile.
Mazou says the UNHCR is scaling up efforts to address the needs of displaced populations inside and outside Sudan. But he notes resources are stretched thin and doing what needs to be done may not be possible. He says the UN and its partners have called for more than $3 billion to help millions in Sudan and those fleeing to neighboring countries, but less than 20% of this appeal has been funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, head on over to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. More than a million faithful prayed today at Mount Arafat in Saudi Arabia at the height of the annual Hajj pilgrimage, one of the five pillars of Islam. The pilgrims pray all day at the site where the Prophet Muhammad is said to have given his final sermon. After sunset, they travel to Muzdalifa, where they will sleep in the open air. Afterward, they will return to Islam's holiest site, Mecca's Grand Mosque, where they will circle around the Kaaba, then the giant black cube that Muslims pray around each day. The French news agency AFP says the Saudi government reports about 1.8 million Muslims took part in this year's Hajj. The number is a recovery from the lows of the past few years when numbers were restricted by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, that number falls short of Saudi predictions of more than 2.5 million pilgrims. Around the world, Muslims are preparing to celebrate Eid al-Adha, the Feast of the Sacrifice, tomorrow. It marks the day when the prophet Abraham prepared to sacrifice his son to Allah, who instead sent a ram to be sacrificed. Muslims are expected to perform the pilgrimage at least once if they are able to. Some youth-led organizations in Zimbabwe's second biggest city, Bulawayo, are teaming up to help raise awareness about the scourge of drug abuse and encourage young people to stay clean. Reporter Kudzinai Musagi has the story.
One of the walls of a liquor store at a small shopping center in a township of Bulawayo is decked with a large mural with varied drawings and messages painted in bright colors and is hard to miss. The wall painting was done with the permission of the elderly shop owner by a youth organization known as Yellow World. Program coordinator Michelle Mlingo says this is part of various efforts that the organization is working on. They are cooperating with other local youth organizations and relevant government departments to help raise awareness about mental health wellness and combating drug abuse.
We're focusing on depression, anxiety, and drug and substance abuse. Mental health issues are viewed as a taboo in our society. When you tell people that you have depression, people laugh at you. When you tell people that I have anxiety, people will be like, oh, what's that?
There are no official statistics available, but drug and substance abuse has become a national cause for concern because of increasing addiction, especially among youths, particularly in the urban townships. This, as the nation grapples with high unemployment and ongoing economic problems. President Emmerson Mnangagwa and other senior government officials often use public platforms to highlight the problem. In April, Mnangagwa announced that government was setting aside 500 million Zimbabwe dollars, now devalued to 71,429 United States dollars, to tackle the problem, including setting up public rehabilitation centers. The rehabilitation facilities that are available are private and expensive for most ordinary people. Pride Mjoli, the program's director for Yellow World, explained to VOA why they decided to use art.
We feel like art communicates bigger than verbal communication, so we did this so that the community can put in their mind a thought about mental health.
A resident, Prince Saurambe, says he is a teenage child who is fighting drug abuse and says he believes such an initiative helps bring the problem out in the open. Besides the artwork, Yellow World is collaborating with others, going into schools and youth centers to talk about mental health as well as drug and substance abuse. Kudakunze is an independent adolescent and family counselor who also collaborates with the various organizations. She shares the view that part of what is worsening the problem among the youths is that mental health is not taken seriously nationally and wants the government to do more, including gazetting stiffer penalties for drug lords.
We need to have the government to build infrastructures that are going to stand as rehabilitation centers. And also we need more counselors to come in and counsel those people, because some of those people we've come to understand that there's hope that they're going to quit abusing drugs. So if someone gets the help that they need with the support of the government, going full force assisting those young people, I think in 10 years to come, we'll be talking about a different story in a good way.
Earlier this year, police launched an ongoing nationwide program to arrest both drug peddlers and users. But some critics allege that this will not help much, as some of the people involved in the drug trade have powerful connections. Reporting for VOA, I'm Kudzanai Msengi in Rulawayo.
Prosecutors in France are asking a court to sentence Rwandan police officer Philippe Hedijekimana to life in prison. Hedijekimana is on trial for crimes against humanity for his role in the 1994 Rwanda genocide. The prosecutor in the case told the court he was not small fish and had a significant role in the wave of killings in which nearly 800,000 ethnic Tutsis and moderate Hutus were killed. He later fled to France using the name Philippe Manier and became a naturalized citizen. He later went to Cameroon, where he was arrested in 2018 and extradited to France. Somalia President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed has urged the UN Security Council to lift an arms embargo on the nation, saying it no longer served its purpose. But some analysts say Somalia is struggling to ensure arms meant to provide security don't end up in the hands of terrorists. Ahmed Mohamed reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud told the UN Security Council his government had put in place sufficient measures to counter the illicit flow of arms. He says the government had established legislation to control the possession, manufacture, storage, and use of arms.
I implore you, distinguished delegates, to support our call for the complete lift of the arms embargo in Somalia. By doing so, you will empower us to assert our sovereignty, effectively combat terrorism, and build a peaceful and prosperous future for our nation.
The Somali leader noted the situation in Somalia had improved significantly, adding Somalia of 2023 is not that of 1992, when the UN Security Council imposed the arms embargo. The African Union Transition Mission in Somalia, or ACMIS chief, Mohamed El Amin Souf, also echoed calls to lift the embargo. The EU diplomat noted there was a need for concerted international efforts to protect gains made over years and ensure sustained pressure against Al-Shabaab.
We must support SSF leadership, hold liberated areas, and take over FOBs. These forces require resources to fight Al-Shabaab and stabilize newly liberated area. This calls for the lifting of the arms embargo on Somalia.
Somalia is in the middle of a military operation against Al-Shabaab. The federal government had said it is on course to launch the second phase of the offensive Operation Black Lion. Unlike the first phase, which involved the Somali army and the clan militia, the second phase will enlist the support of additional troops from Ethiopia, Kenya, and Djibouti, following an agreement among the countries in January. Matt Bryden, the chairman of SAHAN, a policy and security research organization on the Horn of Africa, says while the lifting of the embargo is a positive step for Somalia to affirm its sovereignty, there was no concrete evidence it will change the security dynamics in the country.
It's not clear that lifting the arms embargo would actually change the situation or allow the government to improve its military position. There are already exemptions for the government to receive military assistance, and there are only a few remaining restrictions on the types of weapons that it can procure.
Biden says the Somali government does not have the financial muscle to purchase high-caliber weapons even if the embargo is lifted. He adds, despite the expression by the countries such as Kenya and Ethiopia against the embargo, those countries remain apprehensive that weapons could still fall in the wrong hands. He notes that even at the UN Security Council, where the Africa is represented by three countries, the position of African Union is still against the removal of the embargo. Samira Gate, an independent security analyst in Mogadishu, told VOA the removal of the arms embargo is more critical at the moment as Somalia battles the militant group Al-Shabaab.
Countries is in war against a terror group. It needs all the capacities that it can achieve to take on this group and fight this group and eliminate it from Somali territory. So the prevailing situation, really security situation, argues for a lifting of this arms embargo.
Gates says preparation for the full lifting of the embargo is a political and technical process which calls for a comprehensive review, including aspects of border control and seaport and ammunition control, among other measures. The Security Council imposed arms embargo on Somalia in 1992 following the collapse of the central government and subsequent civil war. In March 2013, the Council, through Resolution 2093, relaxed the embargo to allow the Somali government to acquire a special caliber of weapons for development of its security forces and protection of its citizens. Ahmed Mohamed for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Gabon's government today said it will hold presidential, legislative, and local elections on August 26th. The French news agency AFP reports President Ali Bongo Ondimba has not said whether he will stand again, but he is widely expected to run for re-election. He is seen as the favorite to win against a divided opposition. His Gabonese Democratic Party holds strong majorities in both houses of parliament. Bongo took over from his father, Omar Bongo Ondimba, the country's ruler for 41 years, in 2009. AFP says the opposition has failed to agree on a single candidate for the presidential election, leaving about 15 candidates to announce their intentions to run. That wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yabro, and our engineer, Atreus Regis, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.